after seeing Bradley Beal's takes on not getting the COVID vaccine, I can see why he is consistently one of the worst defenders in the NBA. This past Monday was media day for a lot of teams, and I'm paraphrasing here, but when asked about why he didn't get the COVID vaccine, Bradley Beal went on a lengthy diatribe and more or less said, if you could still get COVID, what's the point? And I could see how he could apply that same position to defense. If you're going to put forward all this effort to stop somebody and there's still a chance that they score, why even put in any effort at all? Now, I don't even know where to take it from here. Welcome back, everybody, of course, to another episode of the Hedging Screens podcast. But I just kind of want to get right into it and address pretty much what everybody has been talking about over the last 24 hours. And it is the fact that the NBA has a very, very minor anti-vax problem. So in recent days, there has been a whole lot of discussion about what's going on inside some of the minds of the NBA players. It started with this quote-unquote expose by this guy, Matt Sullivan. Now, I don't know much about Mr. Sullivan. I know that he is currently, or he already wrote a book about this Brooklyn Nets potential dynasty, getting Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, James Harden, all that. He's written for The Guardian. He's written for Bleacher Report. But he recently published a story in Rolling Stone where he kind of brought to light the league's, I don't even want to say the league's, but how there are a couple players within the NBA who have these really just ridiculous anti-vaccination views. So I'm not going to read the whole article because it is quite lengthy. But this was published on September 25th, which was this past Saturday. And title, The NBA's Anti-Vaxxers Are Trying to Push Around the League, and It's Working. So, memos have shown us that about 90% of the NBA player pool is vaccinated. And over the discourse of the, over the last couple of days, there has been not a lot of talk about the NBA's vaccination resiliency, I guess. There's been a lot of vaccine hesitancy as well, but for any business, any government to have, well, I can't even say government, but for there to be 90% vaccination rates among large groups of people, the NBA players are about 400-450 players strong, for 90% of them to be vaccinated, that is a monumental achievement, and I don't want that to get overlooked in this conversation. So this article here focuses on really Jonathan Isaac, who has come out as an anti-vaxxer, and Kyrie Irving. Now, the Kyrie Irving case is particularly interesting, and there is a lot to say about that, so I don't want to get into that right away. But if I can just do a quick search here. So, Jonathan Isaac is less known by the average basketball fan for his play than for being that guy who stood up with his jersey on during the national anthem in the NBA bubble, while every other player on the court took a knee in a t-shirt declaring Black Lives Matter amid a global reckoning on race and police killings. Quote, I'm not going to sit here and point my fingers at one group of people. Isaac, who is black, tells Rolling Stone, quote, I would do it again. The Magic's 23-year-old starting forward is deeply religious and proudly unvaccinated. Proudly unvaccinated, mind you. Which is basically just a fancy way of saying that he is a self-admitted dumbass, and I will get into this in a little bit. When NBA players started lining up for their shots in March, Isaac started studying black history and watching Donald Trump's press conferences. He learned about antibody resistance and came to distrust Dr. Anthony Fauci. He looked out for people who might die from the vaccine, and he put his faith in God, as a lot of anti-vaxxers tend to do. Quote, at the end of the day, it's people, science, Isaac says of the scientists developing vaccines, and you can't always put your trust completely in people. Isaac considers unvaxxed players to be vilified and bullied and thinks it's an injustice, that's a quote from him, to automatically make heroes out of vaccinated celebrities. She rejects the NBA's proposal for a vaccine mandate and social distancing for players like him during team travel. Quote, you can play on the same court, we can touch the same ball, we can bump chests, we can do all those things on the court. And then when it comes to being on a bus, we have to be in different parts of the bus. To me, it doesn't seem logically consistent. If you are vaccinated, he's continuing, this is a continued quote, in other places, you still have to wear the mask regardless. It's like, okay, then what is the mask necessarily for? And if Kyrie says that from a position of his executive power in the Players Association, then kudos to him. As we've seen throughout the COVID-19 pandemic, as we've seen throughout the increased vaccination rollout efforts, there have been psychotic people on both sides. There is one little bit in here that I agree with. When he's talking about an injustice to automatically make heroes out of vaccinated celebrities, I also think that that is, it's stupid to make someone like a deity for getting the vaccine. And this is coming from someone who is vaccinated, from someone whose entire immediate family is vaccinated. Like, it's not something that you should obviously feel proud doing it because you're being selfless and you're protecting or attempting to protect yourself, others. But I don't want any reverence for someone who gets the vaccine. But we've seen more so that there are multiple different types of anti-vaxxers. There are people who are uninformed, miseducated. There is a lot of anti-vaccine propaganda that is incredibly strong, and that's very distressing to me. But there is also reasons for people to have vaccine hesitancy, particularly in the African-American community. There are systemic injustices done to Black men and women all throughout history, and that is a legitimate reason for vaccine hesitancy and just, you know, reluctance to the medical field in general. There are also people who are just dumb, like straight up. They believe conspiracy theories are very conspiratorial, and they're not even conspiracy theories that have any basis in reality. What I've also seen are people who are waiting for the FDA approval. As we know, there's only one FDA-approved vaccine, that is the Pfizer vaccine, and that has only recently been FDA-approved, despite the fact that the emergency use authorization is more or less the same thing as an FDA approval. And just building on that, I also felt that that didn't really have a lot of basis because the FDA approves a whole lot of suspect shit. Let's do all of the opiates right away. Opioids, Oxycontin, hydrocodone. Birth controls are FDA approved, at least I'm pretty sure they're FDA approved. And of course, I'm not a medical professional, but birth controls are known for messing with the hormonal imbalances of many women. They are really not that good for you. There are a lot of synthetic drugs that wreak havoc on people's bodies. Me, myself, I took Accutane a couple years ago because I had horrific cystic acne issues. And that was horrible. I'm not even talking about, you know, dry hands, chapped lips, stuff like that. There were, like, I did feel a little different after taking it. Like, I don't know how much it fucked with my hormone balance, but let's just say that I wasn't the same person I was beforehand. Granted, I was a lot happier. I had a lot more self-esteem just because my skin cleared up, but I don't think it was just doing good things for my body. But when we get into people like Jonathan Isaac, who is talking about antibody resistance, natural immunity, a distrust of Dr. Fauci, I also think that it was very weird for the media to put Dr. Fauci on this pedestal above everybody else, because if you have a question about the vaccine, you're not going to Dr. Fauci, you're going to your primary care physician. And I get Dr. Fauci is very smart, he's an infectious disease expert, but it was too easy for the changes in opinion to be co-opted by certain media groups to spin disinformation, because a lot of people were under the assumption that this wasn't a fluid process. Like, a pandemic is inherently fluid. Science is fluid. So if we find out that masks are a little bit less effective than we once thought, like, okay, it's still a little bit less effective, but it's still effective at the end of the day. This whole shit, and I saw a clip of Jonathan Isaac, who, again, I think I said had COVID already. Natural immunity is, one, more inconsistent than a vaccine. Even the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, which does not utilize the mRNA technology, it's still more inconsistent than that. And also, studies have shown that natural immunity wears down quicker than the immunity brought on by the vaccine. So that's just ridiculous. And also, it's been proven that natural immunity plus a two-dose mRNA vaccine is the most effective way to prevent severe complications from COVID. Science has shown this. Studies have shown this. And for someone like Jonathan Isaac, who says that he wants to do his own research, or someone like Andrew Wiggins, who wants to do their own research, or your relatives on Facebook who want to do their own research. They're not looking to do research. They're just looking to confirm or to have their confirmation bias reaffirmed. Now, I think something that gets lost in all this is that you shouldn't be going out to get the vaccine for you. I think that was another issue with how a lot of people in power handled the beginning of the pandemic, is not trying to make it like an us thing. It was a you thing. Now, for someone like me who got my vaccine in like July, I think I was one of the last members of my family to get the vaccine. Granted, it's not because I'm a total dumbass. I was slightly skeptical. Also, it was during a time where the pandemic, where COVID was like beginning to get crushed quite a bit during the beginnings of the vaccine rollout. So I thought foolishly that, hey, maybe COVID will be gone. I won't have to get the vaccine. That's cool. But, you know, my mom works in the healthcare field. She got the vaccine right away. Same thing with my dad. And you don't do, pardon me, who's 24 years old, going to be 25, relatively healthy, keeps in good shape. I'm not an elite athlete, but I'm healthier than a significant part of the population. Where it really went wrong is when it was kind of put to the forefront that COVID affects young people differently, which, granted, it does. COVID doesn't kill young people at the same rate as it does older people, people with comorbidities, etc. Although Delta is beginning to discriminate significantly less with the people that it kills. But it's not about me getting sick and dying from COVID. It's about me getting COVID and then potentially passing it along to my parents, who are older. They're in their 50s. My grandparents, my older aunts and uncles in their 50s, their 60s. It's about protecting them. Same thing with all these unvaccinated NBA players. It's about them protecting their families, their children, their parents, their girlfriend's parents, their wife's parents. That is what got lost in translation, particularly when we start talking about Bradley Beal. Now, I think that Bradley Beal, his monologue during media day was the most dangerous, the most inflammatory type of rhetoric, because Jonathan Isaac, you know, he seemed at least understanding of the concerns about the COVID vaccine. And I've encountered more people like that than I haven't, where they just don't really, they're kind of on the fence. Like, they're not so deeply entrenched on one side. Now, when it starts talking about his religious affiliations, I think that's where it gets a little bit into the weeds, a little crazy. But Bradley Beal was just like straight up very dismissive of the vaccine in general. And I think I mentioned it in the beginning, but he addressed the media where there was this one clip making its rounds that was like 90 seconds long. And there was this that one clip where he was like, if you're still going to get COVID, why are you getting the vaccine? And it's like, hey, dipshit, you get the vaccine so that way, one, you don't fucking die. And two, so that way it lessens the likelihood of you being hospitalized. It's just a flagrant disregard for everybody else who is at risk of dying from COVID. And it's just, I just can't imagine how someone can be so selfish. Not only not to get the vaccine, but to be so just, again, dismissive of everything that the science says, of everything that people have gone through, how 600,000 plus people have died to COVID during this pandemic. Now, I don't want to throw Carl Anthony Towns' name in there. I have seen him being brought up a lot on the TL. I don't want to talk about his case in particular, although nothing but condolences to everything that Carl Anthony Towns has dealt with over the last year and a half, losing his mother, losing his relatives. I don't want him to be brought into this. I don't want him to be the, I don't even know where to take this. I just don't want Carl Anthony Towns' pain to be thrown into the forefront. It should be the collective of the country, because again, this is a public health thing. You don't have rights in a public health crisis. And if that's kind of a hot take, guess what, man? I don't care. It's not an us against them mentality. It is an us together mentality. Only the country standing together can put an end to the COVID-19 pandemic, which is why it's still raging on, which is why the United States is still number one in pretty much every fucking category when it comes to COVID. Yeah, Australia has seen a little bit of a bump. Countries in Europe have seen a little bit of a bump. But the United States, especially with Texas and with Florida, it's just, they don't care. They don't fucking care. It's been co-opted by the right-wing party. And now, full disclosure, full political disclosure here, I am a leftist. I am very progressive. I don't really have any conservative ideology. I am maybe a little bit of a libtard, if you guys like that terminology. I like that term a lot, actually, even though I think a lot of liberals are kind of crazy. But it's been co-opted by the right-wing media and weaponized. And now you are meant to see people who get vaccinated or who are rightfully living in fear of the pandemic as just, like, weirdos, when in fact it's the other way around. Like, it's just super crazy, especially when you're an NBA player and you have access to not even all the resources, but the same resources we do. Also, all the doctors that you have access to, all of the things in the medical field that money can get you. Like, you can bring in second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth opinions on things, and they choose to be ignorant. It's very ignorant from Bradley Beal to talk like this. I wish I had, like, I might try to actually find, like, a full transcript of this, because it's just like, dude, it was insane. The disregard for everything surrounding the COVID-19 pandemic from Bradley Beal in particular is fucking, it's fucking ridiculous. It's fucking ridiculous. There are no quotes here. Okay. Fuck. I'm trying to find some quotes. All right. Can we, Oh, and Bradley Beal was someone who got COVID as well. Like, God damn, dude, this is ridiculous. Is this it? I would like an explanation to people with vaccines. Why are you still getting COVID if that's something that we are supposed to be highly protected from? It's funny that it only reduces your chances of going to the hospital. It doesn't eliminate anybody from getting COVID, right? A reporter emphasized that vaccinated people are less likely to die or be hospitalized. This is true. I don't know the exact numbers, but I do know that 96% of patients admitted into the ICU with COVID are unvaccinated. That means that only 4% of people going into the ICU with COVID are vaccinated. Now, chances are, of course, this is all anecdotal, but one could assume that these people are either older, 80s, 90s, maybe even in the triple digits, or have comorbidities. Also, combine that with the fact that after about 6 or 8 months or so, the efficacy of the vaccine does begin to wear down. I think with the mRNA vaccines, it goes from around 90 to 95 to about 70, like 65, 70, something like that. And this is why the administration and the FDA and all of the governing bodies are deciding to start rolling out boosters for only people who are immunocompromised or at a higher risk of getting COVID. I would imagine this is people like teachers or anyone who is constantly working in confined spaces all the time. I do know that you are, I think it's like 5 times less. Yeah. Okay. First of all, Beal is wrong. Vaccinated people are 5 times less likely to contract COVID than unvaccinated people. Vaccinated people are also less likely than unvaccinated people to spread coronavirus. Now, this does get a little bit into the weeds, because with the Delta variant, the COVID vaccines are a little bit less efficacious, and you do get a little bit more of a viral load when you do get Delta. However, the reason the virus is able to mutate is because there is such a large portion of the country that is unvaccinated. And I mean, I've seen a whole lot of people that have rhetoric just like Bradley Beal, but it's different when it's your aunt on Facebook as opposed to someone like Bradley Beal, who is an athlete with a very prominent platform. And not only is he just an athlete, he's one of the most recognizable faces in the NBA, but this guy is a premier talent. This guy's got millions of followers across his social media platforms. And of course, so do the Washington Wizards. So do the people covering the Washington Wizards. Now, okay, you can still get COVID, right? But you're not going to go to the hospital and you're not going to die. As tragic as it is for someone to die of COVID, going to the hospital is just as bad, because you are further burdening the healthcare force that is in that hospital, because you have to be put on a ventilator. You're taking ICU beds away from people who actually need them. I don't know, people that get car accidents, shot, get stabbed, are dealing with pneumonia, stuff like that. You are taking the opportunity away for them to get treated because you're being a dipshit and don't want to get a fucking shot. And then he goes on to talk about another thing is that why is no one talking about the potentially adverse side effects? Which, that's fucking stupid because, first of all, obviously, people have come out and said, medical professionals have come out and said, hey, there are the slight chance that you have severe side effects. They said, expect this. Fatigue, headache, flu-like symptoms. I'm built different. I got the vaccine. I didn't feel anything. Okay? I'm just built different. I'm not trying to brag. I got it on a Friday. I woke up Saturday. I was fucking fine. I was a little tired, but guess what? I'm always tired. So that didn't make a difference to me. However, after my first dose, I did have a splitting migraine the following day. So I don't know if that was connected to maybe like my screen time usage or my phone usage or anything. Either way, I did not deal with some of the side effects that, let's say, my mom did. For example, my mom was down bad. So was my dad. Both of them, they were down for the count. They each spent a respective Saturday just laid up in bed, literally unable to do anything. Now, this is, of course, well known. Doctors have always said, despite the fact that there is the chance of an adverse reaction. And Jonathan Isaac also alluded to this as well. He mentioned the side effects and, you know, the small chance that he could get that upon receiving the vaccine. So I know that Jonathan Isaac is a little bit more based in reality than Bradley Beal. But it's so insane. It's so insane. And then there was that whole thing with Johnson & Johnson. Remember, there were 7 cases of blood clots after like 7 million shots. And the FDA was like, put this on pause. We cannot give out this vaccine right now. There were 7 cases of blood clots in 7 million shots, and the FDA put a pause on it. Bradley Beal thinks that no one is talking about that, when meanwhile, that was a national fucking story. There was also another incident with the mRNA vaccine. So there was this weird spike in myocarditis cases, particularly among young men. In my age group, it was like 16 to 29 young men were seeing the same rates of myocarditis as the rest of the population. However, the rest of the population, it was about 1%, by the way. The rest of the population usually encounters this when they're older, like 40s, 50s, 60s. Myocarditis is an inflammation part. It could lead to other more dangerous outcomes, but the majority of people who were hospitalized with myocarditis were at the behest of the hospital or the hospital workers, the physicians, the doctors who just simply wanted to run more tests on them. And I'm looking at this literally the day before I'm going to get my second coronavirus vaccine shot. And I'm like, damn, that's kind of scary. And the FDA, when I got it, the FDA hadn't even met to discuss what they were going to do. Eventually, later on, it came out that although this is something to be mindful of, it's still exceptionally rare. I also, guess what? I had my mom talk to my doctor because I'm a little baby. I had my mom talk to my doctor. She said he would not be worried about it. This is also my primary care physician is a cardiologist. He's been practicing cardiology for probably forever. I feel like I would trust his opinion more than anything I read on the internet. Safe to say I was still a little worried, but also, myocarditis is a mild inflammation of the heart, as I just mentioned. A lot of the times, it's treatable with just like Tylenol, Advil, any kind of painkiller, anti-inflammatory drug should mitigate the effects. As you can see, I'm still here. I'm fine. This was a couple of months ago. Now, you see how dangerous this type of rhetoric could be, especially when there is nobody to push back onto it. Maybe the NBA should have had something where, I mean, they had to have known, the organizations had to have known that players were going to be asked about their vaccination status, especially in the days leading up to media day. It was such a hot topic. It's like, oh, what's Kyrie talking about? What's Andrew Wiggins talking about? What's Jonathan Isaac talking about? And I know I have yet to talk about Kyrie Irving. I will get to him in a second. I just want to finish my take on Bradley Beal. They should have had medical professionals there to, I don't know, maybe engage in the discourse with the reporters and with the players. Although I'm sure it's not something that the players would have wanted, at least the anti-vax players. And as a result, they've gone ahead and monopolized the vaccination conversation. Of course, this isn't a conversation if we're talking about literally anyone at the end of the bench, as opposed to Bradley Beal, who is an all-NBA caliber player, Andrew Wiggins, who is pretty well-known. This is a guy who was the number one recruit in the country a couple of years ago, still averages like 20 points a game for the the Golden State Warriors. But above all else, Kyrie Irving got a lot of, he got quite a lot of coverage over the weekend in regards to the whole vaccination thing. It started with this report by Matt Sullivan. Now, as I mentioned at the onset of this video, I don't know anything about Matt Sullivan. I didn't even know of him until it was coming out that he was writing a book on the Brooklyn Nets, or again, that he wrote a book or some shit. And then this comes out, and it came out on a Saturday. Now, of course, I could be wrong here. Typically, news that you want to talk about comes out at the beginning of the week, Monday, Tuesday, because that gives the networks, that gives content creators the ability to discuss it. When you drop something on a Friday, for example, it's usually because it's not a piece of news that you want people to remember because they head into the weekend. A lot of Americans' brains shut off because guess what? They work all week. They want to spend time with their family. It's getting into the fall season now, so they want to go out and pick apples. They want to pick pumpkins. They want to hang out with their kids. Their brains shut off, and they go into relaxation mode, rightfully so, of course. And then stories generally don't get a lot of press coverage over these days. Rolling Stone releases this article on a Saturday. And when it came to the whole Kyrie Irving thing, I was always very reluctant to give my opinion on him. I went on Twitter and called Jonathan Isaac a dumbass. I hold the same opinion for Bradley Beal. I think he's a dumbass as well. Andrew Wiggins, you know, he's also a dumbass. But the difference is that Kyrie Irving, we have not heard from the mouth of Kyrie Irving that he is unvaccinated, or at least we hadn't up until Monday. Now, Kyrie did not come out and say that he was vaccinated or unvaccinated. He said, "Please respect my privacy." That's paraphrasing. There was more to it. He addressed the media on Monday via Zoom conference, but I'm getting ahead of myself here. Now, I want to get back to this Rolling Stone story because I think it's preposterously disingenuous because nowhere in it is Kyrie specifically attributed to saying anything about his vaccination status. All of the quotes are coming from, wait, hold on. Oh, here we go. When asked directly about Irving's vaccination status or his plans to change it, this is implying he's unvaccinated, multiple people familiar with his thinking declined to answer directly. One confidant and family member floated to Rolling Stone the idea of anti-vax players skipping home games to dodge the New York City ordinance, or at least threatening to protest them until the NBA changes its ways. This spokesperson is Kyrie's aunt, and she goes on to say this: there are so many other players outside of him who are opting out. Not so many others. There's 10% of the league, which is like 40 or 50 players or something. I would like to think they would make a way. Now, Kyrie Irving, his aunt Tiki, who runs the 7-time All-Stars Family Foundation and is one of the few people in his regular circle of advisors, quote, "It could be like every third game, so it still gives you a full season of being interactive and being on the court. That's not true. You are literally missing half of your team's games if you live in New York and San Francisco and you are unvaccinated. That's 41 games. For someone like Kyrie Irving, who has also dealt with injury issues on top of being, you know, a little conspiratorial at times, he could pretty much maybe miss the entire regular season if just he suffers a freak injury, and that's on top of him missing home games. Of course, he'd miss those games either way, so you could be like, oh, well, you know, more time off for him to recover. That's not necessarily how that works. There can be some sort of formula where the NBA and the players can come to some sort of agreement. A spokeswoman for Irving declined to respond to a list of questions regarding his vaccination and playing status, and Irving did not immediately respond to this message from the Rolling Stone, but his team's prepared preseason. Blah, 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 blah. Irving, who serves as vice president of the executive committee of the Players Union, recently started following and liking Instagram posts from a conspiracy theorist who claims that secret societies are implanting vaccines in a plot to connect black people to the master computer for, quote, "a plan of Satan." This Moderna microchip misinformation campaign has spread across multiple NBA locker rooms and group chats. According to several of the dozen-plus current players, Hall of Famers, league execs, arena workers, and virologists interviewed for this story over the past weekend, this is the best fucking part about conspiracy theorists. Now, I also don't want to take into account Kyrie Irving's social media doings because we don't know if he's running his social media account, okay? We have to acknowledge the fact that not all athletes, celebrities, musicians are in full control of what gets posted on their Instagram, on their Twitter. Is it possible that Kyrie Irving does control these avenues of communication? Yes, it's possible. But it's also possible that he doesn't because he's got like 14 million followers on Instagram and he might just not want to deal with the fucking headache of having to look at his Instagram. So I don't understand. Even if this is true, this is such a fucking bonkers conspiracy theory because, dude, the government is already tracking you, man. Edward Snowden is living in Russia because he talked about this. Like, the whole Moderna microchip bullshit or that the microchip is being implanted into you via vaccine, it's literally fucking stupid because the government already knows where you're at, dude. Your internet service provider tracks every website that you visit. And they can give that information to the government if the government, so-called, asks for it. I mean, really, the only time that this wasn't a case was when, you know, Apple had that whole thing with the terrorist who the FBI wants to look at his phone and Apple wouldn't decrypt it. That's like the only case of actual privacy. But even then, you're still being tracked. Even if Apple isn't giving your information to the government, you're still being tracked by Apple. You're still being tracked by Google. Like, this is actually... this is actually ridiculous. I don't even know if Kyrie even believes this. Like, this seems like super crazy. Before this, Kyrie Irving was just, you know, a flat earther, which is funny. It's playful. It's not, you know, putting people at risk of anything. You think the fucking earth is flat, dude? Like, that's fucking hilarious. Anyway, this article, I'm not going to go into it any further, but, you know, he talks about Kareem mentioning how the NBA should just say fuck it and vaccinate everybody, and if they don't want to get vaccinated, fuck them. That's, of course, much more coarse language than Kareem was using, but I hope I can use Twitter. As of this recording, Twitter is fucked on desktop. Oh, God, please let me sign it, David. And unfortunately, I'm using my phone to record this, so I will be unable to look at Twitter, which definitely fucking sucks big. Dookie, yeah, okay. So Twitter's fucked. This is awesome. I love it. Now, hold on. I might be able to find it on a Google News. Let's try this. So Kyrie addressed the Brooklyn Nets media day Monday, by the way, via Zoom, and he was really the most noticeable Brooklyn Net not there. I'm pretty sure everybody was there except for him. Harden was there. KD was there. It was a lot of fun. Of course, even if like COVID wasn't a thing, I don't know if Kyrie even would have pulled up to media day just because of how much contempt he has for the media, which, again, I spoke about this last week with when we were talking about the Kyrie Irving trade rumors, which is, I could see why athletes are contemptuous toward the media. I mean, especially someone like Kyrie, who, again, has dealt with a considerable amount of trauma in his life, of course, with his mother passing away and everything. Anyway, he was nice enough to address the media on Monday and not just totally blow it off completely. He did it via Zoom. I'm trying to see if I could get some actual quotes. Sitting in front of a bookshelf in very poor lighting, by the way. I caught a clip of this and I'm like, dude, this guy is literally sitting with the fucking lights off in his fucking like library or whatever. Irving said that. Living in this public sphere, it's just a lot of questions about what's going on in the world of Kyrie. But he did not intend to answer them. When directly asked if he is vaccinated or will comply by city requirements by the time training camp is over, Irving appealed to his right to privacy. I appreciate your question, bro. Honestly, I like to keep that stuff private. He said he would handle it the right way with my team and go forward together with the plan. So, you know, obviously I'm not able to be present there today, but that doesn't mean I'm putting any limits on the future of me being able to join the team. He then warned that if anyone had further questions on the subject, it'll be the same response. Okay. Irving's aunt Tiki, this is a CBS article, by the way, told Rolling Stone that his stance is not religious-based, but it's moral-based. I don't understand what the fuck that means. Tiki also referred to Dr. Anthony Fauci as Dr. Falsey. That's funny. Ha ha. Rolling Stone reported that Irving has recently liked those fucking... okay. Reporters didn't ask Irving about any of this, but this one asked why he didn't want to clear anything up. Please respect my privacy. Next question. Now, this was the soundbite that got an awful lot of traction because it was Kyrie, of course, clipped out of context, looking like a dickhead, not actually answering the question. Prior to this, he did answer the question. He said, when the time is right, I will be there. I will work something out with the team. Something will be figured out. Okay? That one clip, I was like, there's no way that this was just his answer. Like, there's no fucking way, dude. The Brooklyn Nets would not allow that to happen. Anyway, again, I would like to keep all that private. Please just respect my privacy. Like, all the questions kind of leading into what's happening, you know, just please, everything will be released at a new date once we get this cleared up. But as of right now, respect my privacy, vaccination. Now, of course, all of Kyrie's teammates were fully supportive of this. Joe Harris is quoted here as well. Yeah, I don't have any concerns, and no, I haven't talked to him about the vaccine. As if he's concerned about Kyrie's availability, Durant simply said no. Neither Durant nor any Nets player directly said that he expects Irving to get vaccinated, rather than engaging with the possibility that Irving would only be able to play on the road. Everyone essentially acted as if this whole thing is no big deal. That's on Kyrie, and that's his personal decision, what he does. It's not on us to speculate what may or may not happen, but we trust in Kyrie and expect us to have our whole team at some point. This is the least destructive form of anti-vax rhetoric. Kyrie, although you could argue, and obviously people have, you know, I myself would argue that's like, hey, just say straight up, I'm not vaccinated. Yes, I'm vaccinated, because shit, especially in New York, especially with Kyrie, especially with what the Brooklyn Nets have done over the last couple of years, just try to avoid any distractions. And Kyrie said that he was hoping to avoid distractions. He was hoping to avoid hoopla. And then, of course, people on Twitter are poking fun because all this is doing is just causing more hoopla. And I understand that. I think that if Kyrie is unvaccinated, I think it's silly for him to not be vaccinated. Now, the reason I'm saying it's just silly and not calling him a dumbass is because he's not, like, ridiculously anti-vax. He's not saying anything inflammatory about the science. He's just saying, hey, it's my decision. Please respect my privacy. I would have said the same thing about Jonathan Isaac if he didn't start, you know, talking about being proudly unvaccinated, talking about natural immunity. Like, dude, just say, I don't have it. It's my choice. I get it. And then I would have said the same thing about Bradley Beal, because with the Bradley Beal saga, I was like, Bradley Beal said he didn't get the vaccine for personal reasons. I'm like, oh, okay, you know, whatever, that's fine. I probably made a joke, but, you know, wasn't actually thinking he was a dumbass. It's like, okay, I don't want to get the vaccine. Fuck it, whatever. And it's not like the Wizards are competing for anything anyway, even though that's not the point. When he started, again, ranting about, like, the science aspect, I'm like, okay, this is dumbass rhetoric. I'm sorry. And I'm not, like, mad at these players for getting or for not getting the shot for a basketball reason. It's all public health, dude. This is all about public health. I would like for people to not fucking die a preventable death. Like, the whole bullshit where it's like, oh, you can get in your fucking car and die, you know, driving to Walmart. It's like, okay, but you wear a seatbelt. And I know that's such a fucking, that's such a lib argument, but it's like, it's kind of the same case. It's like, dude, we have public health laws for a reason. It's like, there's a reason you can't drink if you're 21, because it's a detriment to not only yourself, but also potentially other people, because guess what? You could be a dipshit and get behind the wheel of a car and fucking kill a whole family. Like, there's a reason that we have these laws in place when it's concerning public health. Like, I get that it's your decision, and you're right, it is your decision, but you have to live with the consequences. And I think that, you know, the NBA is going to have to deal with this whole shitstorm. And I don't even really want to think about what Kyrie's absence for the Nets means on a basketball level, because I know I agreed with Isaiah Thomas last week when he said that Kyrie Irving is the key to the Nets winning a championship. And I do. I think that Kyrie makes their path to the championship easier. But regardless of whether he's there or not, regardless of whether he's vaccinated or not, he still could be present for half the season, which is fine. The playoffs, it would get a little bit more squirrely. Of course, that's unless things change and Kyrie at least decides to get, you know, a one shot of something. I don't fucking know. But we're just gonna have to play it by ear. But even if Kyrie is not present, and you know the Nets decide to, I don't know, like void his contract, I don't think that's a legitimate possibility. I do think that it is legally allowed in the terms of the collective bargaining agreement to void a player's compensation if they have an illegitimate reason not to participate. And yeah, I don't really know how that would go over. That seems like a question for a lawyer to deal with, a union lawyer to deal with, not someone who's a fucking dipshit like me. But even if Kyrie's not there, if he does wind up getting traded, if his contract gets voided, something, the Nets will still be one of the favorites to win the title. At least the favorites to come out of the East with how you look at how things are deteriorating with Philadelphia, for example. I knew I was going to fucking talk about Ben Simmons today. And no, that's not a segue because I still have some thoughts about Kyrie and the Nets, but it's not a basketball thing. It's a public health thing. And at the risk of sounding, you know, biased, because I am inherently biased, you could tell by my use of language, I didn't go out and call Kyrie a dumbass because I don't feel that he is. I feel that it's silly for him not to be vaccinated if he's unvaccinated. But again, at least he's not being so outwardly like disrespectful towards people who have dealt with, you know, trauma because of COVID and because of the pandemic, because it's been exceptionally difficult for so many people. Not just, you know, if people have lost relatives, because that's the thing. COVID doesn't affect you until it affects you. Like, you won't consider getting the vaccine until someone close to you fucking dies of COVID. And fortunately, you know, I haven't had to deal with any of that. You know, I've had it pretty fine this pandemic. I mean, I was out of work for a little bit at the beginning, but you know, I was getting the unemployment insurance. Fortunately, both of my parents were still working. I wasn't worried about where my next meal was going to come from. So I'm extremely privileged and I'm extremely fortunate in that regard. But like, people have dealt with so much shit throughout all this. Like, I get people dying from COVID, but think about just like the toll on people's mental health that this has taken, not just from, you know, being locked up. I'm not saying that lockdowns were a bad thing, but we have to acknowledge the fact that the lockdowns weren't all good. There were bad things that came out of having people hold up in their houses. Was it the right thing to do? I think that it was. I think that it was the proper protocol. And I think that, you know, the numbers show that. I mean, I know that there were a lot of suicides this past year. There were a lot of overdoses this past year. And I think some of that is all the external factors. Like, I could only imagine how big of a toll it took on some people's families, you know, to maybe see someone spiral down like a QAnon rabbit hole, or, you know, become super into conspiracy theories. And it's like, you can't talk these people off of their ledge. And it's like, these are your parents, these are your grandparents, these are your siblings, your spouses, you know, people that you hold near and dear to you. And like, that's why the extremely flagrant rhetoric from someone like Bradley Beal, I think, is the worst. Like, even Andrew Wiggins, who I think is a dumbass as well, didn't take it as far as Bradley Beal. It's like, you know, do my whole research thing. It's like, dude, the best part is that the people already did the research for you. The doctors and the epidemiologists and the pharmacists, they did all of that already. All you have to do is just look at the abbreviated pieces of the studies that, guess what, the media, regardless of how you feel about the media, it's kind of hard to manipulate the study because you can always reference that study back, which is why it's also good to look at, you know, medical journals when they publish easy to read information for the dumbasses like me. It's like, but at least you're not spitting in the face of science when you do that. I mean, you are kind of, but also like, You're really not. It's a very fine line between what Andrew Wiggins and Jonathan Isaac have been doing, especially compared to what Bradley Beal has been doing. But, you know, if I saw Kyrie on the street, I'd tell him straight up. Granted, I don't think he'd want to have this conversation. It's like, dude, I think you're a fantastic athlete. All the things that you do outside of athletics are incredible. I just think that in this instance, you're off base. Of course, this is just speculation because Kyrie could very well be vaccinated and he's just like playing the media game. He's just like feeding into the narrative. I don't think that's the case because, again, you don't want to deal with all this extra headache. But I've seen a lot of weird things in the years that I've been covering the NBA. I just hope that all of this gets sorted out at some point. And listen, if, you know, these guys come out and they announce that they're vaccinated and they apologize for how they went about things, I'll be like, I'd accept their apology. Like if Bradley Beal, if he talks to a doctor or he talks to, you know, literally anybody, and he comes out and he's like, you know, the comments that I made on Media Day were, I mean, even if he doesn't get vaccinated, but he just comes out and is like, hey, you know, some of the comments that I made on Media Day, they weren't right. They were disrespectful. I want to apologize for that. I would accept his apology. Like, yeah, that's cool. That's being a man, Bradley Beal. I would graciously accept his apology. I mean, him getting vaccinated would be even better, but I think that at some point, this has to just like transcend like sports. Adam Silver has to step in and figure out something. Like, because I've seen reports that even general managers and like people within the teams are like trying desperately to get the unvaccinated guys to get vaxxed, whether it's, you know, snorted into, whether it's incentives, like doing what the governments try to do or doing what businesses try to do. Krispy Kreme's like, hey, if you get your vaccine, you get 2 free donuts. Like, dude, Krispy Kreme is fucking amazing. Why would you not want a Krispy Kreme donut? God, I hope it comes to an end sometime soon. And I can't believe I spent 45 minutes talking about this topic. I'm expecting this to be a YouTube video, but dude, this is insane. This is legitimately insane. I spent 45 minutes talking about this topic. God damn. Now, do we want to talk about Ben Simmons again? If I were on Twitch, I would love to see the chat spamming, no, shut the fuck up, turn the stream off. God damn, I really don't want to talk about Ben Simmons. I feel like I'm obligated to almost because I do consider myself a news channel. I don't even know what I consider myself, honestly. Hold on. Wait, no, we got to talk about this. Fuck Ben Simmons. LeBron James said he, quote, definitely considered signing with the Cowboys or the Seahawks during the 2011 lockout. What is this timeline? Discussion of LeBron James's football career was an inevitability when he appeared on ESPN's Monday Night Football Manning cast and used the time to revisit a significant NBA what if. During an Eagles-Cowboys game, the LA Lakers star was asked by Eli if Cowboys owner Jerry Jones really offered him a contract during the 2011 lockout. No shot, dude. James said, that's true, Jerry offered me a contract. Pete Carroll did as well in Seattle during the lockout time. It definitely got my blood flowing again, my mind racing about the game of football being out there on Sundays. We were able to get a deal done in the NBA and I was back on the court, but I definitely thought about it. That's insane, dude. How insane is it that LeBron, who hasn't played football since he was like a junior in high school, I think, hasn't played football in like 20 years, and yet two professional football teams, not only that, two above average football teams. I think the Seahawks were like contending for a Super Bowl during that season, or Seattle Cowboys, or like they were, I'm pretty sure the Seahawks were contenders that year. Oh no, they weren't. Okay, I lied. They finished that season 7-9. But then, okay, so then they went to the playoffs the year after. Of course, I don't think LeBron would have stayed with the team for that long, but dude, that's just fucking insane. LeBron hasn't played football in 2 decades, or at that point, it was about 10 years, not two, I'm sorry, it was about 10 years or so. And, you know, the crazy thing is that he would probably go to the NFL and still be decent, like, just off of his physical traits alone. Of course, that's always what people talk about when talking about LeBron James as a football player, like being 6'8", 250, literally insane. Impossible to guard. Like, I don't think he would have led the league in receiving yards or anything, but I do think that, you know, it wouldn't have been ridiculous for him to have like 80 or, you know, 75, 80 yards a week, something like that. I would love an alternate reality where LeBron James was a football player just for like 4 games and somehow he would set the record for the most receiving yards by a tight end in a four-game stretch. Like, I just feel that that's what would happen. Because as far as I'm concerned, LeBron James is not a human being. He is an extraterrestrial who came from a planet where they just build ridiculous athletes in a lab, and he was transported onto Earth to just dominate everybody. Like, this guy could probably go to fucking baseball and be good. Like, that's just crazy. Anyway, of course, we have to talk about Ben Simmons, because why the fuck would we not? Because why the fuck would we not talk about Ben Simmons? We always talk about Ben Simmons. There were reports that Ben Simmons is done with Joel Embiid. That's always good to hear. He said, I don't remember the specifics. I'm trying to find the article. It really sucks that I can't use Twitter as my search engine. Where are we? Okay. So, you know, there was a lot going on with the Sixers media day. There was this one clip about Joel Embiid talking about how, you know, he obviously wants to play with Ben. And if there were to be traded, like, depending on the trade, you would expect the Sixers to do it. Like, he explicitly mentioned trading Ben Simmons for Steph and Clay, which would not have happened. Like, pardon me. Like, he expected that if Golden State wanted to make a trade for Ben Simmons and they approached the team with Steph and Clay. Well, that was yesterday. Now, today, I saw reports that Ben Simmons, where are we? We talk about fucking Joel Embiid, dude. Talk about Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid. Where the fuck is it? God damn it. I'm starting to think this was fake news. Okay. I know that the Sixers were very supportive of Ben Simmons. Doc did a whole 180 on him. Like, after questioning his ability to be the point guard on a championship team, dude, Doc is like simping hard for Ben Simmons now, trying to get back there. Where the fuck is the article? Where's the article about Ben Simmons saying that he feels he can't play with Joel Embiid? This is fucking annoying. Where are we, dude? Okay, here we go. Fucking finally, dude. Ben Simmons believes playing with Joel Embiid has, quote, run its course. Now, this was, where are we? As he sees it, sources say the organization's decision to build its basketball ecosystem around Embiid's style simply isn't conducive to the way he needs to play. So while Embiid insisted to reporters on Monday that he wants Simmons back, this much is clear. The feeling is not mutual. It's run its course, the sources said. Pairing. This is dumb rhetoric. This is like my new favorite phrase, dumb rhetoric. I don't understand. Like, I get being angry at the organization for how they've treated Ben Simmons. I also understand why the organization is maybe a little bit disappointed with how he hasn't really developed as a professional NBA player. But to say that Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid have run their course as a pairing is just asinine. It's just asinine. There might not be two more complementary players in the NBA where their play styles are actually more conducive than one would think. Because Ben Simmons, not an offensive powerhouse or not a scoring powerhouse, but a great playmaker. Someone who can run the offense. More importantly, someone who can feed Joel Embiid, who is, as it stands, one of, if not the best centers on the planet. It's really between him and Nikola Jokic. But at any rate, Joel Embiid can realistically give you 25, 26, 28, 30 points a night. And Ben Simmons can give you 7, 8, 9, 10 assists a night. Of course, if anything, it's not super conducive for Joel Embiid. Because Ben Simmons and his reluctance to develop a semblance of a three-point shot will just allow the defense to collapse on Embiid harder, especially if they're trying to feed an entry pass from the wing. Because then, guess what, dude? The fucking defender just drops, and you're shit out of luck. They can clog the paint. take away the long skip pass to the opposite wing, and the offense is fucked. Generally, that doesn't happen because Joel Embiid is just uncontainable on the block. But I think this is way off base. The sourcing might be a little funky. I don't know. I mean, this just seems very out of character. And you could talk about the numbers all you want. I'm sure that Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid have a spectacular net rating when on the court with one another. I think I saw something like it was plus 13.3 when they were on the court together. Of course, I don't know if this was just like the two of them together or if it was the team's net rating when the two of them were playing. Either way, both make sense because let's be real here. The Sixers, although they haven't lived up to their potential, have had a string of great seasons with Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons both there. Even when Embiid was hurt, Ben Simmons was around to pick up the slack, giving you 20 points, you know, 19, 20, 21 points. He was able to give you something. And again, it's just super weird to see how quickly their relationship soured. And I still hold firm in the belief that they're done, dude. There's nothing that the Sixers can do to repair their relationship with Ben Simmons. And at this point, I feel that there's nothing that Ben Simmons can do to repair his relationship with the 76ers. And at the end of the day, it sucks because, you know, the Sixers want him to be there because they know he's a great player. They know he's a great player and a difference maker. But I also understand why Simmons is a little upset and he's holding a little bit of a grudge, because if they did tell him that, hey, you're untouchable, we don't feel that there's ever a scenario where we'll part ways with you, and then next thing you know, they're shopping him, this, that, whatever. It was just a very messy situation all around. We have power rankings? Is this behind a paywall? It's not. So, courtesy of ESPN, we have preseason power rankings. Who are the favorites heading into training camp? I think we all know who the favorites are. It's really only one of two teams. It's either the Brooklyn Nets or the Milwaukee Bucks. And if it's not if the Nets aren't number one, the Bucks are. Or if the Nets aren't number one, they're number two, and vice versa with the Milwaukee Bucks. So let's go ahead and scroll down to number one, of course. The Brooklyn Nets, they have, I think, they boast the highest title odds at plus 225, which I don't understand sports betting, so do with that what you will. Having a great training camp with the full roster will be a boon for Nets coach Steve Nash after the midseason additions of James Harden and Blake Griffin last season. While Harden was able to fit in seamlessly on the fly, Brooklyn will get even more practice time with its three stars after he played just 332 minutes, including the playoffs with both Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. Sorting out how Griffin, LaMarcus Aldridge, James Johnson, Paul Millsap, everybody else fits into the rotation is the key. It's definitely the biggest key. The Nets' depth is what will stop them from being champions this year. If they have good bench play, it's over, dude. It's over. And they do mention Kyrie Irving here, which I think is, you know, optimistic because, again, best case scenario, Kyrie is unvaccinated and only plays in half the season. So we'll see what happens with that, but I have no issue with either Brooklyn or Milwaukee being the top of the power rankings. They're very clearly the two best teams in the NBA at this point. The Nets, they have all the talent in the world. Of course, it's just a chemistry thing, a cohesion thing. The Bucks, on the other hand, they have a shitload of talent, and they're coming off winning a championship together. They kept that team together. So they have a legitimate chance to be repeat champions as well. They're actually below the Lakers in terms of title odds, which is very interesting. I would 100% take that bet, though. I would definitely take the Bucks over the Lakers in terms of championship winnability, I guess. The Lakers are a gigantic question mark for me. I think that they are being... I don't think they're being overrated necessarily. Either they're being overrated a little bit, or the rest of the teams at the top of the Western Conference are being underrated. And we talked about this in the power rankings or not the power rankings, the over-under rankings. I don't see a world where the Lakers are able to just march to the championship without some sort of resistance. They could very well play, let me do the math here, 21 games before going into the finals. If they even were to make it that far, they could definitely play a 7-game series in the first round, second round, and most certainly the conference finals, when they're going to be going up against a team like Denver or Phoenix or the Clippers or Utah. It's as it's always been. The West is super talented. And speaking of the Suns and the Jazz and the Nuggets, the Suns, Jazz, and Nuggets are ranked 4th, 5th, and 7th, respectively, with the Miami Heat being above the Denver Nuggets. The only thing that the Nuggets have to worry about this season is Jamal Murray. I think that had Jamal Murray not gotten hurt last year, I don't know if they're going to the finals, but they're definitely not getting swept by the Phoenix Suns. They could have seriously beaten Phoenix if they were healthy. And their championship odds, their over-under, it's all affected by Jamal Murray because you are missing an all-star caliber player. I get that you have Michael Porter Jr. I get that you have Nikola Jokic, who is the reigning MVP. MPJ also just signed a max contract, which is... That is a devious lick that this man hit. I'm not trying to shit on Michael Porter Jr., but this guy got a max contract after one good season. Hear me out. Granted, I understand that he was in the last year of his rookie deal, but this guy, and I get that he was spectacular last year. 19 points, 7 boards, shot like, what was it? He shot 45% from 3. Awesome. Dude, I get it. Spectacular player. But it was only one season of that. He missed his entire rookie season with a back injury. Year 2 wasn't shaky, but it was him trying to get into a rhythm. I don't know if I would feel comfortable giving $200 million to a player who had just one good season in 3 years. But that's just me. It's not my money. I really don't give a shit. Anyway, I do think that the Nuggets, if they do get off to a slow start, it will be erased once Jamal Murray comes back. And, you know, once the playoffs come around, I think that they'll be just as good as anybody. We have the Sixers next, ahead of the Atlanta Hawks, ahead of the Golden State Warriors, ahead of the Mavericks and the Clippers. I think that, you know, the media is definitely, they're hoping that Embiid can carry this team. Because everything I see, very positive toward the Sixers. I think that they're underrating Ben Simmons' impact a lot. I don't think the Sixers win a title without Ben Simmons or someone that is his equal caliber. And what do I mean by that? They're going to need another all-star caliber player who is a versatile offensive player, not just in terms of scoring, because they have that. They have Tobias Harris, who last week I talked very graciously towards. I think that he might be an all-star this season. He could be someone who averages 24, 25, 26 points a game this season. Might be a 50, 40, 90 guy. We don't know. But the Sixers, they're going to need another, you know, above average playmaker in the backcourt position. And I mean, of course, Simmons' defense, they're going to miss that as well. But I think collectively they're strong enough to overcome that. It's really just more so the offense for me at this point. So I'm not so confident on the Sixers. But then again, I'm also like, after these 7 teams, I mean, Miami, I don't even know how I feel about them being contenders either. I mean, Jimmy Butler, Kyle Lowry, of course, PJ Tucker, Markieff Morris, you got Bam Adebayo as well, Duncan Robinson, Tyler Hero. I think they'll have a good season. I just don't know if they're like in the upper echelon of teams in the East, because they don't have a copious amount of talent, right? They don't have 3 all-stars like the Nets and the Bucks do, or at least 3 all-star caliber players like the Nets and the Bucks do, and they are bringing in a lot of pieces. So unfortunately, while they're building that chemistry, they're not going to be able to fall back on their talent, like if things do get rocky. Now, Eric Spoelstra is a phenomenal coach. I'm sure he'll figure something out. If anything, this Miami Heat team is going to be absolutely dominant on defense. They're going to be like frighteningly dominant. Like it's going to be a 90s NBA type dominance on the defensive front. I don't know. I think I'm going to underrate them a little bit. But really, after these seven teams, like, I don't think the Sixers, I don't see them being contenders. The Hawks, I definitely don't think are contenders just yet. The Warriors could be the surprise this season because they are rated so lowly. I mean, they're not even rated that lowly. They're 10th. They're picked as the 10th best team in the NBA here. But, you know, dude, fuck it. I'm going to come out and say it. The Warriors will be way better than everybody expects this year. I think the Warriors just go right back to being contenders. Fuck it. Who cares? I know the Mavericks aren't contenders. The Clippers are contenders. Of course, it just depends on what happens with Kawhi Leonard. When does he come back? Does he come back and it's already too late? Do the Clippers want him to come back if they're a sixth or a seventh seed? I think I would hope that they would, but there are just a lot of questions. And then really everything below this, there are no contenders because Boston, the New York Knicks, I think the Knicks are going to be a lot of fun. They'd be a lot of fun to watch this year. But they're not winning a title just yet. Trailblazers, Memphis, a whole bunch of good teams. I don't even want to say not that many contenders because seven, let's take the Heat out of the equation. Even if it's six contenders, when is the last time that the NBA had six teams contending for a title? I don't fucking remember. Because guess what? Throughout the 2010s, who was it? It was Miami. It was Cleveland. Golden State, San Antonio. Of course, these weren't all at the same time. But then even before that, it was really just the Spurs. It was the Lakers. I'll throw the Celtics in there as well. I don't think that there has ever been this much contention in the NBA. Like, maybe that's just me being dumb. Possible. But, you know, everyone always talks about how there's no parity in the NBA, how it's the same franchises competing for titles over and over. But, like, this is going to be a very fun postseason. There's going to be a lot happening when you have all of these teams vying for a championship. Like, there are going to be upsets in the second round. And not only that, you have a bunch of, you know, teams that aren't maybe contenders, but they're still really good teams, like the Hawks, the Knicks, the Celtics. I'm definitely missing some. The Mavericks, like, teams that have talent, who can't win a championship just yet, but are definitely good enough to bring down one championship team on their run. Like, I don't think any team in here is having a 2011 Dallas Mavericks run where you go and you beat the Lakers and you beat the Spurs. They also beat, I think, the Blazers that year. So they beat Brandon Roy, Kobe Bryant, Tim Duncan, and then you go to the finals, you beat LeBron James and Dwayne Wade. That's not going to happen this year. If it were to happen, it would probably be Dallas again. You know, maybe even Golden State, but someone like me who is kind of, I guess, thinking more optimistically about the Warriors, I wouldn't really see that as an upset because, like, Steph, Clay's coming back. You might have Andrew Wiggins for half the season. You have Draymond. You have James Wiseman. I don't know, dude. It's gonna be a lot of fun. I'm coming up on 70 minutes here, so I want to close this out. And as usual, it's Tuesday, it's the end of the fantasy football week, and you are looking at an undefeated manager. Ladies and gentlemen, you are also listening to an undefeated manager. After getting off to a very slow start this week, my team came in clutch, dude. I pulled off this victory 138-110. Thank you to Kareem Hunt, Devontae Adams, as well, had a monstrous night on Sunday Night Football. This man was just, he was playing with magnets. The Packers implanted magnets into the football, and then they did the same thing with Devontae Adams' fucking gloves, because this guy was all over the place. And I managed to survive this week because there were fucking injuries, dude. I didn't realize, like, how many people got hurt. Like, okay, so the person I was going up against, A.J. Brown, had 0.3 points because I think he had a hamstring issue. I think it was a hamstring issue. A lot of hamstrings taking down people this week. They also had Christian McCaffrey, who, as we know, left Thursday's game with a hamstring injury. Rob Gronkowski got absolutely clobbered on this one play during Rams-Bucks and was incapacitated for a little bit. He did ultimately wind up coming back, but, you know, great performance. I don't even want to say great performance from Patrick Mahomes, but, you know, three touchdowns, 260 yards, pardon me, would have been a lot better, minus those two interceptions. Could have been closer to 30, whatever. I just know that I'm in a better mood. Chiefs fans, because the Chiefs are kind of fraudulent to begin the season, which I was not expecting. I had great, great performances from my running backs this week as well. Kareem Hunt, touchdown, 150 some odd yards from scrimmage. Chris Carson also broke off for a pretty long touchdown run early in the game, which helped amplify my cushion. But yeah, dude, I'm currently, I think I'm second in the league. There are three undefeated teams. I'm second. I think I'm trailing by like 40 points or something. But yeah, Amari Cooper did not play that well on Monday night. Fortunately, the game was decided on Sunday. It was actually decided on Sunday after the afternoon games. I was down by like 6 or 7 or something, but Devontae Adams quickly made up that deficit. And I'm looking forward to week 4. And with that, I'm going to close this one out. Thank you guys so very much for listening. As always, everything I'm associated with will be down in the description. If you're listening to this on Apple Podcasts, go ahead and subscribe, leave a rating and a review. It helps me out tremendously. If you're on Spotify, be sure to follow the show. Also, be sure to follow me on social media and subscribe to the YouTube channel. Catch you guys next week.